You've been emailing us, and now it's our turn to answer here on Fantasy Football Today. Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, July 21st. Jamie and Heath, here's a question for you from Paul in Lake Elmo, Minnesota. Of the top four running backs, Lacy, Charles, Peterson, and Bell, who has the biggest bust potential, and who's the safest pick out of Lacy, Charles, Peterson, and Bell?
I'll let you go first, Mr. Cummings, because I know who you're going to say.
You know who I'm going to say. So I will say the biggest bust potential is Adrian Peterson, because I'm not even sure he is a top four running back. And I will say the safest pick has to be Jamal Charles.
Wow. No homerism there.
There's no, I mean, if you look at those four running backs, who's been the most consistent over the last two or three years? It's been Charles.
Well, that's not fair to say. I mean, Lacy and Bell are going into their third season.
Okay, so they've been here for 2 years.
I think Lacy might be a little safer, but I wouldn't argue with you. Charles gets
sounds like you are arguing with me.
No, I mean, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I guess if I had to pick a safer, I'd go Lacy. How about you, Jamie?
Lacy, to me, is the safest.
The
only reason I think Charles is because there's a guy that, you know, is looking over his shoulder that has some potential, and Charles getting up in age. And, you know, I just know this from talking to Andy Reid at the owners' meetings that they want to get Niall Davis on the field a little bit more this year.
Well, they've wanted to do that for at least a year. Niall Davis has been – he's had some good games, but he's also been pretty unimpressive when he's gotten a lot of carries.
Right. It's more a matter of circumstance and the team he's on as opposed to his talent level. But there's still – I don't think it's really as much about Niall Davis as it is about resting Jamal Charles.
Right.
Because you want to have Jamal Charles if you feel you're a playoff team. You want to have him – there for the playoffs. Right. The guy with the most bust potential, I think it's a tie between Peterson and Bell. And the reason I say Bell is because if he's out the three games, and if he misses, let's just say, two or three because of injury, that crushes him if he's picked in the top three picks.
Yeah. One thing about Charles is the Niall Davis thing is while you do have to draft Charles' handcuff way before any other running back's handcuffs, probably... at least you're getting the most secure situation. So if he does get hurt, you could feel good about having Niall Davis, right?
I believe it's six times, and I want to say it's six times that he's had double-digit carries for Niall Davis. It's definitely 15 or more carries, but six times that I think he's had double-digit carries, he's gotten you double-digit in fantasy points.
Yeah.
I'd buy that because he's been – the one thing he has been really good at is getting into the end zone during those games.
Right, and getting a lot of work.
Yeah.
So it's going to lead to a good total yardage production, and then also the ability to score touchdowns, yes.
Well, we welcome you to the Mailbag Show, and you know how much I love mailbags. So again, our email address is fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Everybody doing a much better job putting football podcasts in the subject line. Warms my heart. Today we'll talk a little news on Marvin Jones and Cody Latimer. We got an email about the Dallas running backs. That should be fun. Somebody's got a nominee for the number three quarterback in fantasy to continue a conversation we had last week. We'll talk Trey Mason, a DST that someone wants us to consider, plenty more. Injuries, news, and notes begin with the Redskins, who are going to be giving season ticket holders breaking news on injury updates before everyone else. Who here in the department is going to purchase season tickets for the rest of the crew?
That's maybe the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I included this in here because I was looking forward to Heath's reaction.
But it's just, and I guess I get the reputation of being the Debbie Downer all the time, but it's just, they're not really going to give the fans good injury information in the first place. And in the second place, this isn't 1940. If the information goes to the fans, it's going to be on Twitter seconds later, and so everybody else is going to have it.
I don't think seconds later. I think it'll be...
maybe before they get to the fans.
Yeah. You would think that that's where they're getting it from. I mean...
right.
They're not at every game. So,
right.
I know just from sitting in the green room, on the set of the NFL Today, I guess that would be counterproductive. Sitting in the green room with the crew from the NFL Today, not on the set of the NFL Today. Whenever there's an injury that occurs, just to give you like a little peek into how they work, there, at the time, their NFL insider was Charlie Casserly when Dave and I were there. Mm-hmm. And so Charlie would immediately pick up the phone. He would call one of his guys at that stadium, fellow GM, scout, whoever the case may be, and say, hey, what's going on? And he would find out within minutes, you know, typically what's happening. Now, obviously, the beat reporters at the game are trying to find out their own pieces of information. But, you know, there's a process that happens because typically, unless it's something so glaring that, you know, broken leg or you know, something that's not just being released right away. You know, it takes a little bit of time for these injury information stuff to leak out, but I doubt that the Washington season ticket holders are going to know before the rest of America.
And okay, let's just take it at face value. Let's pretend like they are going to know before the rest of America. And maybe I'm way out in left field on this one, but who cares?
Yeah, no, you're right. Look,
do I really care if you tell me 5 minutes before you tell everybody else about an injury news?
You know, it's different. Fantasy football is different than any of the other sports because there's nothing you can do immediately to change the result of your team. There are some leagues where you can do ad drops on Sunday, but for the most part, those don't exist.
Yeah, that's been such a good change throughout the years because I'm sure we all used to play in leagues that were like that, where the guy sitting at his computer on Sunday would scoop you and get the best player.
Well, you were in a league like that, right? Last year.
I still play in leagues like that.
What?
I've still got a couple of those.
You did that too, Adam, right? Weren't you in one of those leagues?
I don't think so.
I could have sworn there was a situation where you made an ad. You said something about this last year.
It might have been 2 years ago.
It might have
been my girlfriend's league, but I think I might have been wrong about that.
I mean, I've got, you can't pick up guys that played on Thursday, but I'm in leagues where you can pick up guys that haven't played yet.
No. Not Sunday morning.
No.
Okay.
Sunday during the games.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like Sunday during the game, you're watching
like
the Cowboys
like
game.
If you see a guy get hurt in a baseball game, you could immediately pick up his replacement.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like
I read this injury news before everyone else, I was thinking like
Sunday morning.
Actives and inactives on Sunday morning.
Maybe that's what they're doing.
I think it's in-game updates. But Heath, just to give you a practical example of what I'm talking about, something that probably will happen, week two, watching the Cowboys on a Sunday, Darren McFadden gets hurt in the first quarter. You can't go out and pick up Lance Dunbar because the lineups are locked.
I got something funny for you, Adam. So we did a sales pitch for a company. So we did a fake week one start sit segment. Heath, myself, and Jamie Erdahl.
Uh-huh.
And one of the sits was Drew Brees at Arizona. And he said, it's a shame that Brees doesn't have C.J. Spiller, who's already hurt for week
he's
one.
He's already hurt?
It was literally like right after we came out of here, we went on set and we did that.
That's pretty funny. That's good, Heath.
We did nail it, yeah.
All right, let's move forward here. Some teams are showing interest in Reggie Wayne. Is there any team that could sign Reggie Wayne, who's going to be 37 years old, that would give you interest in him in fantasy?
Packers?
Not for me. I think the only one from...
The Colts?
Really, no, but I would say the Patriots might be the one.
Okay. Dennis Pitta.
Because if the Patriots believe in him, that gives me a little bit of hope.
He could play tight end.
And they've got targets to give away.
Talking about tight ends, Dennis Pitta expected to begin the year on the PUP list. And last year, Owen Daniels had the third most targets and third most catches on the Ravens. We have talked about some late tight ends. Nobody ever drafts Max Williams. Not saying they should, but what do you guys think about Max Williams, the rookie tight end?
Well, it's a rookie tight end, and the offense is a little different. I know Mark Trestman's system has been good for Martellus Bennett the last couple of seasons. But I still think, I'm going to tell him what you just did, by the way, Adam.
It was a scratch, 100%.
It was so not
100 million percent. I swear it. I swear it.
Wow.
I swear, Jamie, I would have done that if I were in the room with you.
Just to let everybody know what Adam just did.
It wasn't a pick, it was a scratch.
I can see him on Skype. He clearly picked his nose while he leaned over to the
swear to you, I did not pick my nose.
Sorry, sometimes you gotta pick your nose.
Look, it's okay, buddy.
I didn't pick my nose, but it sucks that you saw that.
getting back on track.
Max Williams is a rookie tight end. The offense is different with, Trestman now calling the plays. there should be some opportunity for him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of those guys you stream,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think anybody's drafting him.
I drafted him in a league a week ago, and in this league, you draft...
Dynasty or redraft?
Redraft.
Okay.
You start two running backs, three receivers, a tight end, and three flexes, and 22 roster spots, and I think that's the kind of league where you might draft him.
Marvin Jones says he is healthy. He's entering his fourth season. He missed all of last season, but Jones was the number 24 wide receiver in standard scoring leagues in 2013 when he had 10 touchdowns on 80 targets. And Gary Kubiak and Emmanuel Sanders seem high on Cody Latimer. So if you were going to take a flyer in the late rounds on a wide receiver, would you prefer Marvin Jones or Cody Latimer?
I would lean toward Latimer just because of the team he plays for and the quarterback he plays with. because I think AJ Green, excuse me, coming back to 100% based on what we saw last year will clearly be the guy who monopolizes targets. I think Jones is going to have to compete a little bit, for his opportunities, although I do think he'll end up being the starter. But I think Tyler Eifert's going to steal some work, and Giovanni Bernard's kind of role now morphing into more of a, you know, passing downs back. Whereas Latimer, you know, could see a good opportunity. I know, again, just going back to what we just talked about with Gary Kubiak's offense featuring tight ends, and Noah Daniels is there now, and Virgil Green. But if they do, you know, roll out because of Peyton, their three wide receiver sets, Latimer's going to see a lot of time. And he did get a great opportunity this offseason with Demaryius Thomas not being part of the offseason workouts. He was filling that role, you know, so he got a lot of work with Peyton Manning.
Okay. Ready for emails?
Yes.
Here we go. FantasyFootball@CBSI.com. Jason from Albany, New York says, "Dear Dolph, Kearney, and Jimbo." Oh, come on. Really? That's The Simpsons. Why so lukewarm on The Simpsons? Those are the books.
Yeah, I don't watch adult cartoons.
I don't watch a lot of TV. Sorry.
It's The Simpsons. It's like, okay. Why so lukewarm on Joseph Randall? Adam was criticized last week for drafting him, but why not lock up Dallas's backfield by drafting Randall in the third and McFadden with a mid-round pick? But I got him in the fourth, by the way, Randall. If Dallas doesn't add another player, doesn't that signal that they think one of those guys will emerge as their lead back behind that awesome offensive line? Heath?
Yeah. I'm going to try to bring some NRG. this is all about opportunity cost. And I don't think you were so much criticized for drafting Randall, just the running backs that you took him over, and you stated later that there were a couple of guys that you probably should have taken ahead of him.
Well, Jonathan Stewart was one. And I don't know if I said definitively anyone else. Maybe Latavius Murray. No, you took Murray, I think, one pick before I took Randall. So.
Yeah, my memory's not that good. I believe there was a run on running backs that you started with Joseph Randall, and in my opinion, he probably should have gone at the end of that run and not at the start of it.
Here, I'll tell you right now who it was. I think, first off, I don't know how many people will be able to pull off what you did, Adam. I hope that they can. If they get one, get both.
Right, I did get both, yeah.
Did you get Lance Dunbar, though?
No. And should we even care about Lance Dunbar? I think it's a question worth asking.
Well, I think there is for all the guys that we do care about late at running back when we're stockpiling running backs in late rounds, I'm not sure that all of them have a higher potential than Dunbar. Because McFadden could get hurt and Randall could be bad. And those two things both are very possible.
I just, to me, Dunbar is like a better version of Theo Riddick. I don't know how much he's going to do in terms of carries and how successful he'll be. But your point is valid. If you're going to swing for the fences in round 13, 14, 15, depending how long your draft goes, there's no reason to not take a flyer on Dunbar. The run on running backs that you're referring to, Heath did take Latavius Murray one spot in front of Joseph Randall, but it wasn't that significant of a run. It was Randall, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 picks later, TJ Yeldon went.
Oh.
And then 2 picks after that, it was Jonathan Stewart. Then after that, I took Amir Abdullah. Andre Ellington was the next running back, taking 6 picks after that. So
it was the end of the round. It was toward the end of the round 3 to 4 run.
Right. And you also mentioned Heath, which went, it went in the next round after Randall, so that's round 5. It was Abdullah, Ellington, Giovanni Bernard, who you like over Randall.
Yeah, I like all three of those over Randall.
I think the one thing to consider, if you don't overvalue Randall, and I don't necessarily think, Adam, you overvalued him here. I know, Heath, you disagree with it a little bit. The one thing is, if you're taking him in a spot that you feel is comfortable, and I think round 4 is, I like Yeldon and Stewart personally better, but if you're in that round 4 range, round 4, round 5, if you could somehow pull off both, it's a good situation. The thing you just have to keep in mind with the Cowboys now is where they fed DeMarco Murray everything. I would not be surprised if it's 2 series for Randall, 1 series for McFadden, Dunbar working in on passing situations, and you just don't know if you can feel comfortable or feel safe starting one of those guys on a week-to-week basis. Randall should have the most upside if he's healthy, at least as of right now, but you're hearing rumblings about maybe Chris Johnson, which would be awful. You know, and maybe bringing somebody else in if there's an injury or somebody gets cut that they feel can work in their system.
You know, my biggest concern with Randall, I think, is the off-field stuff. And maybe just more like, is he mentally capable of being a lead back? That scares me a little bit, just with his history. But not enough to not avoid taking him in the middle of the fourth round, which I thought was appropriate for him. And so did Jamie, but maybe not Heath. Okay. Ethan says, hello, Cardell, JT, and Braxton.
They're Ohio State quarterbacks, correct?
They are. They are. Nice. Good for you. This is Ethan from Newfoundland, Canada. Why is everyone so quick to discredit the Titans? Sure, no one has any idea if Mariota will be a bust or not right now. And yes, they might have an overabundance of mediocre receivers and tight ends. But is there not a high potential for this team, the Titans, especially with the potential for David Cobb to gain the role of primary back and a healthy Arakpo on D to boot?
I think of all the teams that I think are going to be awful offensively, they have the highest potential.
More so than Cleveland.
Oh, absolutely more so than Cleveland.
Really?
I think. Yeah.
Interesting.
And maybe not, but there's at least a chance in my mind that Mariota could be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see any chance that Johnny Football is going to be good.
Or McCown.
I don't think the McCown to Dwayne Bowe combination is going to, I mean, because even at receiver, I mean, I don't see anybody at receiver that.
So you think Tennessee will be worse?
No, I'm saying of all the teams that are, I expect to be bad, I think the Titans have the highest upside.
Oh, okay.
Like, they could be good.
Yeah, I was like, Jamie, why are you making the case for Cleveland?
Yeah, I was trying to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
I guess that's, maybe we shouldn't totally discredit them, but I do think there's something to, I mean, if a team has the potential to be as bad as the Titans do, not drafting any of their players is probably a pretty safe strategy.
You're not going to see a lot of guys drafted. That's the one thing. It's, Walker will get drafted. Delanie Walker will get drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Kendall Wright, I think, will get drafted. At least he should get drafted. People mm-hmm. will take a flyer in deeper leagues on Green Beckham if he's healthy. And obviously David Cobb's going to get drafted as well as Bishop Sankey. The fact that the reports out of Tennessee is that Sankey's still the starter.
That's a gross.
It's, yeah, you know, look, we sat here a year ago, and I don't want to speak for Adam, but Dave and I were certainly promoting Sankey because of his opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first running back taken for a team that needed a running back.
Jamie, I took him number one
over Sean Green for 6 weeks.
I took him number one, Jamie, last year in our fake dynasty draft. I had the number one pick, I'm pretty sure. And I think I took him.
Oh, I went on Dynasty League podcast telling people I think Bishop Sankey should be the best rookie. I mean, clearly I was an idiot with that.
Yeah.
With the way that the rookie receivers turned out. But it was opportunity versus position scarcity. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, we were looking at a terrible rookie class, at least going in, and he had the chance to be a starter. So you want to hope that the kid rebounds because, look, we'd all like to see another running back in the mix that we can draft and use and get value out of. But David Cobb is the guy I think that people are going to target. The one thing about Mariota, which I think is interesting, is his running ability. Because if he can get you, you know, close to, I'll be optimistic, close to 500 yards rushing, he's going to throw for 3,000 plus yards. It may not be 3,500 plus yards. He's probably going to have in the neighborhood of 20 touchdowns. You know, he could have a Derek Carr type season. I pulled an Adam.
There you go.
There. He could have
you picked your nose?
Huh?
You picked your nose?
No, I never do that in public. he pulled a Derek Carr, passing type season. You know, so Mariota's somebody that's interesting. The one thing though you got to hope for is that they get this offset language stuff stupidity out of the way, and he's in time. He's in camp for the start of camp.
Next email is from Simon in a UK city of Dave's choice, so we'll just say London.
Well, Heath, you're from the Midwest, so Dave only picks Midwest cities. Go ahead.
No, this is a United Kingdom city though.
Yes, but he only picks Midwest. So go ahead.
Okay.
Iowa City.
Let's go with Cape Girardeau.
Cape Girardeau.
Dave only picks cities, and Adam only picks his.
Very good. It's about who the number three quarterback could be. It says, how about the Philly quarterbacks? I'm thinking of drafting both Bradford and Sanchez. I can get both very late, which helps my roster depth. And the Eagles quarterback combinations have finished fifth in scoring last year and third in 2013. That doesn't sound right to me. Maybe in 2013.
I believe that.
The combination in 2013? Well, Foles was 10 by himself.
13, yeah, but I'm not sure about last year being fifth. Sanchez wasn't that good.
Well, we could certainly add up the numbers if you'd like.
Yeah, I would say, I believe that. Do you believe it, Jamie?
I don't know. You know, everybody's scoring is different, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're top 10. Let's just ballpark it there.
No, absolutely top 10. Three would surprise me, but sure.
Well, and here's the thing. I think the strategy he's talking about, taking both of those guys really late, is a fine, solid strategy. I just don't know about talking about them as the third best quarterback. he framed that kind of strange.
The one thing you have to do when you do this, though, is at some point, if you're going to, you know, you're essentially handcuffing the starter, which is most likely going to be Bradford. You're going to at some point have to carry three quarterbacks for a week, which, you know, you could potentially run into a situation where you're making a tough decision on who to drop.
Wait, why do you have to do that? I think you just...
If you're handcuffing the two to guarantee that you have the Eagles quarterbacks in the event of a Bradford injury, you don't want to throw Sanchez back.
I don't know that you do that. I think you draft both of them, or, well, it depends when we find out who the starter is. But if you know Bradford's the starter, I don't think you should draft two Eagles quarterbacks.
Well, in the case of the scenario here of how they finished, it's been two guys each of the first 2 years of Chip Kelly's offense.
I mean, I'm not, I guess you could predict a Bradford injury, sure, but you're right, Jamie. That's a lot to roster.
I'm looking at Foles and Sanchez, and it looked like, to me, combined, they finished like 13th.
Well, do you have their fantasy numbers?
Yeah.
What are the point totals?
I've got Sanchez at 103 fantasy points.
Okay.
Foles at 89. So that'd be 192, which looks like it's tied with Jay Cutler for 13th.
And that's 6 points for passing touchdowns?
That's touchdown heavy, yes.
I got some stats that I want to throw out about this quarterback situation. First of all, Nick Foles had an amazing 2013 season.
Some would call it lucky.
Yes, I think most.
And last year, Mark Sanchez had by far his best season. He had a 64.1% completion percentage, 7.4% better than any other previous year, 88.4 passer rating, which was 6.2 points better than any season. So it's obvious that Chip Kelly can mold the quarterback. You go back to two seasons ago, Sam Bradford, he only played 7 games. In those 7 games, he averaged just under 20 fantasy points per game, which is, you know, top 10 material with 6 points per pass.
He would have been on pace for what he was, number 7 that year.
He would have, I think, the, you know, the reason why I had been saying that stat a lot, but I think there might have been some other guys who didn't play 16 games.
Well, I mean, you're just projecting it how it finished.
Yeah. So I'm very interested if Bradford is the starting quarterback and has a training camp and plays preseason as a starter. I don't know about Sanchez because he did have some bad games and he did throw a lot of interceptions. He threw 11 picks to 14 touchdowns in 9 games. What do you guys think?
Well, the numbers are definitely off. What Heath said is accurate. They would have combined for 310 fantasy points.
Right. So they were not third best.
Peyton Manning finished number 3 last year at 393.
Right. Yeah. Oh, but would you be a lot more interested in Bradford than Sanchez, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. I'd be interested in either one as the starter, as a handcuff. And we talked about this numerous times, that if you're the Brady owner, the Eagles do have a favorable schedule to open the season with their first 4 games in terms of what they could do. You cannot get past, and you know, we probably should make this a little bit broader discussion at some point. When we talk about liking an entire receiving core, I mean, it's very hard to get past Jordan Matthews, Nelson Agholor, and Zach Ertz as guys, you know, Heath, obviously we can't look at your rankings. I don't know how you feel about those three guys in particular, but Dave has all three guys. You know, Agholor is in his top 35, whatever it is, so he has him as a number 3 receiver. Matthews is a top 15 receiver for him, and Ertz is a top 10 guy, and the same for me. So, you know, with what those running backs do out of the backfield, there's going to be production for this quarterback.
Yeah, you can't rank those guys that high and not think there's going to be a starting fantasy quarterback out of that offense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree that if Sam Bradford's healthy, which we could have just put that on auto record for the last 5 years, but if Sam Bradford's healthy, he's the best quarterback Chip Kelly's had so far.
Yep. Okay. Next up, we have David, a Bills fan. It says, "Dear Jim, Thurman, and Andre, best one we know, can you guys talk a little bit about
Dolphins?
Yeah, wrestlers. They're giants, like Andre the. Can you guys talk a little bit about the different strategy, if any, in a total points league versus head-to-head? I'm trying a total points league this year for a decent amount of space bucks. Okay. Is there a difference for you guys?
Are space bucks like Bitcoin?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I think that you don't worry maybe quite as much about consistency. And I think people don't look at that as much as they should in head-to-head anyway. But you're more okay, in my opinion, with guys like Andy Dalton a couple of years ago or Torrey Smith. I mean, Torrey Smith's wide receiver 21 to 23 every single year,
right?
But he does it with 17 points in 1 week and one in the next,
right?
So I think those guys are maybe a little bit more valuable in total points leagues than they are in head-to-head.
The receivers that you hate, Adam. these guys come into play in this format much more so than they do. The Torrey Smiths, the Martavis Bryants, the big boomer bust guys, and the TD heavy running backs, you know. So like David Cobb, for example, he may have a couple weeks where he scores twice but has 45 yards rushing, you know, like the Matt Asiatas of the world. So those guys come into play a lot more. Like Mike Tolbert would be a guy I would look at with a late round pick where he could have a 2-touchdown game, and maybe some of these new 2-point conversion rules will help him.
Well, and another thing is, generally speaking, and not always, but these total points leagues tend to be leagues where they're draft only leagues.
Best ball.
Yeah. Where you just pick your team and you don't set starters. You don't do waiver wire picks. It just goes.
It's just your entire roster. I'm in a draft like that right now. It's an IDP draft. I was just telling Keith about it this morning. I pick at number 11. Adam, tell me what you think of this start. It's PPR as well. So Matt Forte at 11. Demaryius Thomas in round 2. Melvin Gordon in round 3. Jimmy Graham in round 4.
I like that start. I like that start quite a bit. Unfortunately, Matt Forte will be hurt in week 3, but.
Yeah, but see, that's where it doesn't matter, because I'm going to end up drafting Jeremy Langford, because nobody else is going to take Jeremy Langford in a 20 something round draft with IDP player.
I don't know how Matt Forte falls to 11th in PPR. That's.
Well, it's because JJ Watt went number 1.
JJ Watt went number 1.
Oh. All right, fine. So he fell to 10th in PPR?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty good. All right, then. Next email is from Miles in Beer City, USA. It says, Dear Gozer, Vigo, and Onionhead. I don't know who Onionhead is.
But you know Gozer and Vigo.
Of course. Those are Ghostbusters characters. It appears to be a 1958 movie, Onionhead.
Oh, Christmas movies again?
What's that?
Christmas movies again?
Actually, this email says, As a diehard Ghostbusters fan, I enjoy the discussion about Ghostbusters 2, but Adam is right. Ghostbusters 2 is a New Year's movie. Christmas is never even mentioned, but New Year's is mentioned probably 20 times.
What it is? That list I saw is probably holiday movies. I agree, it's not a Christmas movie. It's not like Die Hard. But it's one of those things where I think it was a holiday movie list.
It's probably politically incorrect to have a Christmas movie list. You probably should have a holiday movie list.
Well, the thing that's always funny about this discussion, Heath, thankfully that you're on it now, because you can change the diversity of it, but it's always three Jewish guys talking about if Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and we always get that, you know, random tweet that finds that funny.
Yeah,
that is funny. I'd never even considered that.
Yes, myself, Dave, and Adam are always debating if Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Wait, and it is.
Which one's Christmas again?
Oh, confirmation from the non-Jew.
Yeah, right.
I think I'm the authority on the subject.
Christmas in July, right? Because that's when Die Hard was released. Just so everybody knows. Here's the question, though, from Miles.
Wait, you did read the next sentence where he says Adam is wrong and Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
No, he skips over that. He skips over that part. All the time.
He didn't say it. Fine.
You know what he
does? He did say that.
You know what he does? He has to give a little pick, and then he jumps back into the email and he skips over the line.
See, here's the problem, Heath. I'm going to be hearing about this nose pick for the rest of my tenure here at CBSSports.com, which might only last to the end of the show if I keep hearing about it, but I didn't even pick my nose, and I'm now going to be the guy who picked his nose on
the show. Well, I mean, I don't know how your parents raised you, but I was always told, don't pick your nose in public, because if somebody catches you, you'll never live it down.
That's right.
And so that's why I never pick my nose in public.
I wish I'd gotten that advice.
Someone to catch me and make fun of me about it for the rest of my life.
In terms of actual fantasy, I'm really in love with a lot of the round 4 running backs. What do you guys think about trading something like a 5th and a 9th rounder for a 4th, and my 6th and my 8th rounder for another 4th? So I guess that would be giving up your 5, 6th, 8th, and 9th for 2 4th rounders.
I generally think that's not a good strategy. I've found, because I like trading draft picks a lot. I think it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think it adds a lot, and it just, you know, gives you a little. I've found that I have more success trading back. Like, I do better if I'll just try to accumulate second, third, and fourth round picks and get out of the first round.
Okay, but that's different than trading back.
So I don't like giving up. In most leagues, unless you're in a league full of experts, there's a lot of good players that fall into the 5th, 6th, 8th, 9th rounds that shouldn't.
See, that's the best point. I think it's, you're going to trade your 5th and your 9th to get an extra 4th round pick, and then let's just say you have it mapped out that I want this player, this player, this player to fall to me, or that I would take in round 4, and then that player was there in round 5.
Yeah, but he probably would be, at least one of them.
Right. You know, so that's, I think, where you run into problems. And look, he's going to know his league better than we know his league, but I would anticipate, you know, we've talked about this, round 4 running backs, right? That was the whole purpose of that show, round 4 running backs. we totally discount that other leagues don't wait until usually round five or later for quarterback runs, round five or later for tight end runs. You know, so when those guys get pushed into that round three, round four range, those running backs get pushed back. You know, so you may be looking at a Joseph Randall in round five or potentially a round six. TJ Yeldon may not go until round five. You know, you're going to see some of these guys. Latavius Murray may not go until round five. Jonathan Stewart may not go until round five. And so I don't think you need to necessarily mortgage your entire draft just to get an additional 2 fourth round picks. If you could do one of those trades, then maybe that's something that helps your team out. But I think you're giving up too much. You know, to give up round five and round nine to only move up to round four. If it's round five and maybe round 13, I'd be okay with something like that.
Yeah. Okay,
but
next
email.
The
other person would do it.
Next email from Chris in a small town in Central Texas. Anybody got any?
Laredo?
Sure. Dear favorite Batman characters 1, 2, and 3.
Ooh, I've got two of the three.
Okay.
I don't have three favorite, because I feel like so many of the Batman characters get overplayed to the point where they become annoying. Like, they really just grind my gears.
Well, Bane and the Joker have to be.
Even the Penguin. The thought of the Penguin was way overplayed.
No,
but
I'm saying Bane and the Joker have to be part of this favorite characters.
Oh, no. Mine are Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
Okay.
That's your favorite?
And Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman.
She was good. But Uma Thurman was so, like, cheesy.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
All those characters were cheesy. Those Batmans were just bad movies.
I thought Jim Carrey was good.
I guess I don't really remember well enough. I didn't like any of them until the Christian Bale ones came out.
That's because you were, what, like seven when the first ones came out?
You weren't even allowed to see them.
They're pretty much every year on my birthday they would come out and we would see them and they just weren't good.
Well, the first Joker was good. I mean, Jack Nicholson just played a different kind of Joker.
That one was before I started.
I like Jack Nicholson much better than the Penguin.
Yeah, so yeah, I could see that.
The first Batman came out, you weren't old enough to go see PG-13 movies yet?
There's no way I was 13.
You're such a baby. It's so fun.
I don't know how old I was, but I wasn't 13. Here's the question. Oh, well, first two things. Okay.
Wait. So the au pair wouldn't take you to see Batman?
Oh, enough with the au pair and the nose picking. See? Oh, God. It's going to last forever. Over the weekend.
We have one live studio audience member, and he's laughing every time I say something.
He's laughing at... Shut up. Okay. Over the weekend, we saw Jurassic World. It was so bad that my wife has lost her right to pick every other movie for 1 month.
Pick?
Anyway, there's an odd scene at the beginning in which the kids in the film leave home to go on their trip to Jurassic World to the tune of Tony Bennett's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. My first thought was, is this supposed to be a Christmas movie? Weird, huh? So what's the verdict? Does this one song make Jurassic World a Christmas movie?
No.
No, it's not like Die Hard where there's multiple things about Christmas.
Dave and Jamie
in the movie.
Would say yes. Thank you for proving my point. All right, here's a football question. Adding on to last week's discussion about sleeper DSTs, bear with me on this one, but the Browns invested heavily in their defense with 7 picks, including Danny Shelton, and Barkevious Mingo should be healthy. And they start the year at the Jets, home against Tennessee, and home against Oakland. Should they be drafted, the Browns?
Okay. This is where scoring system really matters a lot, I feel like. If you're in a league where it matters how many points or yards you give up, then probably not. The Browns defense is going to be on the field all the time. So if all that matters is sacks and forced fumbles and interceptions, they may be like a high volume play where they are a good sleeper, especially against these teams. But if you could possibly get penalized for giving up 30 or 40 points, especially if they score 14 of them on interceptions returned for touchdowns, then I would not.
But do you think they're going to be on the field a lot in these particular matchups? Because these are bad offenses, too, that they're facing.
But the Jets are a great defense, so you could see
they're not
that.
Going to be able to move the ball against the Jets.
Would you be surprised if that game is 6-3?
No. Are the Jets, given that they have Brandon Marshall and they drafted Devin Smith and Stephen Ridley, am I forgetting someone? Big addition
Zach
to their
Stacy.
Offense?
Zach Stacy, yeah. Don't forget about him.
Are they still a must-start against for a DST?
Yeah,
as long as Geno's the quarterback, yes.
Now, if we get some Fitz magic, then maybe not.
Okay. I don't know. I couldn't see myself drafting the Browns, but it's not Look, I mean, if you're just playing for week one, it's not a bad idea
at all. It's not bad, and there is talent there. The problem is that, like he said, they're going to be on the field a lot. They're going to get tired. And you have to wonder if frustration might sit in at some point with those guys, too.
Rohan from Hoboken, New Jersey. Question for the podcast. Where should Trey Mason go? If Todd Gurley is hurt, why wouldn't Trey Mason become an RB2 or a flex at worst? And how about Devin Smith? Could he be this year's Martavis Bryant?
No. Unless they trade for Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I don't think Geno Smith's throwing for 4,900 yards.
Where is Trey Mason going?
He's going like past round 7.
He's probably a value.
We talked about this a little last week, that if you're drafting now, you're getting Trey Mason at potentially a steal. But if you're drafting come August, he may be in the round 2 flex conversation. The bottom line is we don't know what Todd Gurley's status is. So let's just say he's out for 6 weeks and is guaranteed to come back, which nobody can say that. But if he's guaranteed to come back, then it doesn't necessarily pay to draft Trey Mason, because we've kind of illustrated that the first 4 games for the Rams are pretty tough.
Right. By the way, Jamie, you said round 2 instead of RB2, so just want to clear that up. We do not expect Trey Mason to be a round 2 guy.
No, I would not take Trey Mason in the second round. Unless it's a keeper league and he's just not kept and there's like 12 players per team kept.
Walt from Dave's hottest choice of a city in Texas.
In where?
Texas.
Laredo?
Dear Toby, Andrew, and Tom. Oh, yeah.
It's 3 actors that played or are going to play Spider-Man.
That's right. Who doesn't know that?
Are you looking at the notes? Because he put the answer in the notes.
I always look at the notes. Isn't that why you sent them to us?
Well, I know you might. I don't know about the other guy.
I just stare at you waiting to pick your nose.
That's worse than me picking. Great news. My league has made the jump to auction draft. Oh, he said action draft. That'd be even more fun. But
ooh, I would love to have an action draft.
Auction draft and fab this year. Free agent acquisition budget. My question to you is, what are your favorite custom league settings? I'm looking to personalize the league a bit more.
Well, PPR, I think, is the easiest route to go. You could do IDP.
Well, what? He doesn't care about that. He wants to know what your favorite is, Jamie.
I do so many leagues, I don't really have a favorite.
League settings. Like, so this is like unique things about a league.
Yeah.
I like things where the last place team has to do embarrassing things.
Well, I think he means like scoring.
Well, that's a league setting. Okay. I like, what are you laughing at?
I mean, it's just like what? What kind of embarrassing thing?
There's like, I've seen a league on Twitter before where the last place team has to get a tattoo.
That's pretty cool.
Well, we just had was a tweet or an email about the guy who said he has to go to New York and
yeah, wear a sign.
Right, wear a sign.
Yeah.
And I also think one thing my home league has done since the start is everybody has the draft that you get together for your home league, but at the end of the year we also have an awards banquet.
That's cool.
Which is really just an excuse for everybody to get together and say, "Honey, I have to go out to the awards banquet tonight."
So what are you going to do this year now that you moved?
I think it'll probably be over Christmas and I'll probably be back.
No, but the draft.
The draft I'm going to have to do remotely over Skype for the first time ever.
Why don't you invite the whole league to Florida and do it here?
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, it's beautiful in August in Florida.
It's a great time to be here.
I'm sure it's really cold in Missouri.
I bet it's hotter. So far, I've been thoroughly unimpressed by this alleged oppressive heat of Florida.
It hasn't been bad.
It's hot in Missouri.
Now, I think to answer the question here and actually help Dave, I will say I like 12 teams. I don't really mind a 3-receiver league because I think people overreact to it. And
with flex or without flex?
No flex. And I think you can get amazing running back values there. And yeah, I don't do keeper leagues and I hate my dynasty teams, so I'll just say redraft. I like to keep it pretty simple, but fab is absolutely the way to go. Absolutely.
And I would say if you're going to do IDP, just start with one per position. Take one defensive lineman.
And then expand.
One linebacker, yes. One DB, and one flex that you get a chance to, you know, potentially get 4 players that you like.
I do really like both keeper and dynasty. I don't know if I'm not a huge fan of just the strictly redraft anymore. You got to keep at least one or two players.
We're going to try to get through the next few emails in about 5 minutes, guys. So here we go. Josh, from a city in Maryland that served as the capital of the United States for about a year towards the end of the Revolutionary War. This would be Annapolis. I didn't know that. And that's cool. Yeah. So he says, dear, I know you guys won't get this because you're losers, but he says, dear David, Stephen, and Graham, and occasionally Neil.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
Hey, good job. Well, Dave and Jamie wouldn't have gotten that.
No way.
And he says, I'm not getting any younger, as in Neil Young, so let's get right to it. I'm in a 14-team league, standard scoring, typical 9-person roster, but a larger-than-average 8-person bench. So our draft is 17 rounds and 238 total picks, 14-team league. My question is, in this format, when does it make sense to draft a DST?
Late.
15th or 16th.
I don't know if I agree, you guys.
Well, we talked about this last week. It just depends on what you're hoping to get. I mean, you went into it. You get a good example. You went into it thinking the Steelers had a great schedule.
Yeah.
And you drafted the Steelers, and the theory was right. Great schedule, typically good defense. You know, they have been, you know, trending downward, but your thought was, okay, they could be successful against, and I won't speak for you, but they could be successful against weaker opponents, a la what we just talked about with the Browns,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Good players, good schedule. You would think they should do well. And then, you know, you have the surprise like 2 years ago with the Chiefs, where nobody expected that defense to be good, and they were the best scoring DST, at least for the, you know, first 13, 14 weeks of the season. So while everybody will try and, you know, angle for Seattle in round 8 or round 9, you may be better off waiting for, let's just say, Minnesota, who has a good defense with the potential to be a very good defense.
Okay.
Or Cincinnati bounces back. Or
yep.
But in this,
I agree totally, and I want to go back to that question about my favorite league setting and just say that no defense or kicker is my favorite league setting.
And I want to go back to it and say this guy here with his league of 9 starters and 8 bench players, I hate that. I hate big benches. What is the point of accumulating all this talent if most of it's going to sit on your bench? And for this particular guy, for Josh from Annapolis, I think you might – I'm thinking I would probably draft defense early because a lot of people are going to pick 2 defenses.
No.
In a 14-team league with 9 bench spots or 8
no.
bench spots, I would pick 2 defenses unless
that
I took Seattle.
Mistake.
I don't think it would be a big mistake because what the purpose does your bench depth serve? You're starting 9 guys every week. And
you can have all the backup running backs.
If you miss – on a DST, you're going to be scrambling for garbage on the waiver wire.
No, because there's only going to be 15 defenses owned because you're the only person that's going to take a second defense.
I just don't think.
No, I think he's right here. If defense is scored on a very high level, I'm in a 12 team league where defense could be the highest scorer for your week.
I hate that.
It's way out of whack.
Too. I hate that too.
And some people carry 3 just to, you know, block you from getting 1.
That's awful.
You know, so, and it's not a deep bench like this. So I don't think it's a bad idea to take 2. I still just don't know if I would do it relatively early. I wouldn't be the first one to take a DST, and I'd probably let 4 or 5 come off the board before I would even consider it.
Yeah.
The one thing that you factor in is when everybody starts taking DSTs, it's still pushing the value of good players down another few rounds.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily ruining yourself by taking one a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I'm not saying go crazy and take one in round 6 or something, but I'd be mindful of it. You might be screwed on waivers if a few teams take multiple DSTs in a 14-team league this deep. Just keep that in mind, because I ran into that issue last year in a 16-team league. All right, Jordan from the Chicago, Jordan the Chicago Cheesehead. Aaron, Bart, and Brett, understandably you guys were lower on Justin Forsett in 2015, but what about PPR leagues? Does his value jump in a PPR league? Is he a solid RB2, Justin Forsett PPR?
Are we really low on him?
I think I talked bad about him in the last podcast, and maybe it may have sounded like I was speaking for everyone, so I'm the only one low on him. I think everybody else is normal on him.
Dave is not low on him.
I mean, to me, he's a round 3 guy in standard leagues. I think in PPR leagues, though, he's a top 12 guy for me. I mean, in as much as I'm nervous about him, and if I take him, I'm definitely taking Javorius Allen. I think you just got to understand, you know, kind of who he is. You know, it could be a 1-year wonder, but in Trestman's offense, could be fantastic, and what he showed last year could be great. And this is a receiving core that's pretty bad. You know, when you look at it as a whole, there's some potential, but I mean, Steve Smith's 100 years old, and Breshad Perryman is, you know, had some drop issues and is still a rookie receiver. Kamar Aiken, I want to see it first. Max Williams, I want to see it first. So
yeah, I wrote about him last week and talked bad about him on the podcast. But what I was talking bad about was that in standard leagues, he was being drafted as the running back 12. And I think that's way too early in standard leagues. But yes, I do think he's an extremely, very solid, good running back 2 in PPR. maybe even bordering on that running back 12 ADP that he has in standard leagues.
I need to give some information out to the people out there. Two URLs for you to remember. The first one is cbssports.com/play. And this will get you to our CBS Sports Commissioner product. It's going to give you instant access to updates, to advice, everything you need entering your draft. And you're going to receive exclusive player rewards, including a free draft kit app, discounted team gear, and plenty more. So that's cbssports.com/play. If you haven't played on cbssports.com, it is worth the money. It is awesome. We have a great product for you and obviously good advice. And also the draft kit, cbssports.com/draft. If you want all the advice, over 150 pages of rankings, cheat sheets, sleepers, breakouts, busts, get it right now, cbssports.com/draft for our draft kit. We have an email about Charles Johnson. We will wait until Thursday's show to read it because he
thinks Jamie, oh, man, that's the greatest introduction as well.
Well, we're going to get it on Thursday. You're going to be here Thursday, right?
No.
You're not?
Nope.
Why?
Man, I got things I got to do.
You're going to be here Thursday. Get out of here.
Is all Dave right. going to be back?
Oh, I don't know. What doesn't mean Heath can't?
No, I'm just asking.
I have no idea. You're Dave's best friend forever.
I don't think Dave's going to be back.
You know what Friday is, right?
Is that Dave's birthday?
Dave's birthday is Friday.
I don't think anybody needs to do that either.
Here's what everybody needs to do.
Oh, no.
You need to tweet Dave on Friday. But say, like, wish him happy birthday, but don't do it in, like, normal, like, happy birthday, Dave. Like, just, like, say, like, something wacky, like, I don't know.
I think they should use emojis with balloons. Balloon emojis.
What should we do? How should we tweet
Dave? I don't know.
Dave
hates his birthday, so don't do anything.
I don't have any part of this, actually. I'm backing out.
It's fine.
This is just Jamie's work.
That's fine. I'll take full responsibility.
Yeah.
The only thing Dave has asked, and I will respect his wishes, is to not touch any of his personal property. Because last year, we did a horrible thing by putting balloons all over his desk.
It was so funny. There must have been 40 balloons.
40? At least 50.
In his little cube. It was so funny.
And we put pictures of him on the front doors of the building that said, have you seen this fantasy writer? Please wish him a happy birthday.
Oh, that is great. Oh, man. I'm going to
miss that. He has requested and threatened that if any of his stuff is touched, he will. He's threatened retaliation. So I'm actually not even going to talk to him on Friday, but all of you need to tweet him something about his birthday.
Maybe give it some thought, Jamie, for Thursday's show, and then we can...
What if he's here?
Well, then, I don't know. I don't know what to say, but he said he won't be here. So I have to wrap up the show. Thank you guys for your time. Much appreciated. Jamie, forget what you saw via Skype.
I picked this podcast as the best one yet.
Yes, you picked a winner, Jamie. Good for you. Heath Cummings, Jamie Eisenberg, thank you guys, and we'll see y'all later.